When I was 6 years old, I knew our street perfectly. For instance, I could tell you where everybody lived by the colors of the doors to their duplexes. Howard Cohen's had blue doors, Paul Wasserman's green with white trim, and the duplex where Daniel Stern and his big brother Gary lived had shiny varnished doors. Paul's duplex had the best dirt under the stairs for making roads, while mine had the best backyard. And since everybody knew where everybody else belonged, we all respected each other's property. If someone was an enemy that week, he knew he'd better not step on the wrong side of the street. "You don't live here," we'd yell. "Stay off our property!" Fortunately, the lines between our properties were well demarcated. Goye Street, with its rows of neatly parked cars along either curb, separated Daniel and me from most of the other kids I knew, and high wooden or metal fences separated the backyards of those who lived next door to each other. Every backyard and fence was different in size and look, and we would brag about what we had, or in times of hate, make fun of what someone else had. "My backyard is better than yours, and you can't come." Sometimes I hated everyone, and then I could lie on the grass in my backyard, under the crabapple tree, shielded by ranks of close-standing wooden pickets. From there, the surrounding duplexes were invisible, even those of Barclay, the street parallel to and behind Goye, but high up a steep slope. Barclay's yards, red brick walls, and iron staircases were hidden by the woods running like a spine down the middle of the block. The yards of both streets abutted onto the woods, but there were no fences on our side, so I considered those woods part of our property. It was my favorite place to play, with or without my friends, and I explored the woods until I knew every tree, every boulder. I called the biggest tree rising straight up out of the slanting soil my tree. It was the one I always climbed or played near, and so belonged to me. My mother would sometimes come out of the kitchen onto the back balcony and yell at me to be careful as I pulled myself up into its branches to sit in the unyielding fork where I dreamed of building a tree house. I didn't understand why she was worried, so I ignored her as long as I could before finally dropping to the ground to keep her happy. She even worried when I played up there without climbing my tree, because the ground sloped so steeply. She was sure I'd slip and break my arm. Even my father once said at the supper table that he was surprised that hill didn't cause more accidents, although I had no idea what kind he meant. No matter what they said, I never give up my woods. The only kid in our neighborhood who ignored the rules about property was a retarded kid named Stevie. We never found out his last name, because no one I knew had ever spoken to him, and he didn't go to our school. No one was his friend, obviously. Daniel managed to scare us by claiming he'd once been to Stevie's house and seen where they'd tied him to the bed or wall to keep him from breaking things and biting people. I half believed him. None of my other friends ever claimed to have played with him, and I couldn't imagine anyone trying. Stevie would stand silently nearby and watch us play, occasionally venturing to within a few feet of us. If you tried to talk to him, he'd start to cry and run away. As long as he didn't bother us, I could tolerate his coming on to Goye, even though he lived on Bedford, one street down. But even retarded kids had to obey the law, and as far as I was concerned, the laws of property were absolute. They were how things were supposed to be, the way the world worked. I even thought the word property was based on proper somehow.